here, so. Oh, we topped it. We cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Just before we start this podcast, I just want to have a message from one of our sponsors. One of our main sponsors is Apeiron Clothing, where you can get premium golf wear at discounted prices. Check out our website at www.apeiron-clothing.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Kevin and Mark, and we've got a special guest, Mr. Hunter Mahan. How's things, brother?
They're excellent. They're excellent. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate you taking the time. Definitely, Hunter, how is things your end?
They're great. They're great. I'm here in Dallas and just being a dad and a husband and having a good time enjoying it. Kind of been fun watching professional golf from all kinds of different perspectives. And it's been kind of awesome to see how much great golf's kind of happening and the future, taking it from a different lens has been a lot of fun. I can enjoy it a lot more and appreciate these guys and everything that they're doing now is so cool.
Yeah. What is your viewpoint on golf's current
landscape?
Yeah. And where we are with it all.
It's it certainly isn't flat, is it? It's pretty rocky. it's taken so many twists and turns and yeah. It's hard to, it's sad in some ways because I think so many friendships and people that I know and their relationships and friendships that they've built over such a long time have sort of deteriorated, which is really sad to see. Something that's so near and dear to my heart is, you know, the Ryder Cup. And that feels like some of the, I don't want to say soul, but so much of, you know, Sergio is such a big part of it and Ian are such a big part of it to feel like they're kind of being, I don't say banished from it or anything like that, but it's sort of that history has kind of been is disappeared in a way, and to see Sergio not be a captain, it seems like sort of like that's just never going to happen. Is a sad thing, and Ian not going to be a captain when you can see that their line of succession was coming up.
Yeah,
it definitely hurts. It definitely hurts to have kind of witnessed that. And there's been so many other kind of spider webs that come off of what has happened in the last year that has been unfortunate. But, you know, I think the players have benefited and financially, but I don't know. I don't know where, you know, we're going from here and how it kind of looks, I guess.
I'll tell you one thing for sure. That new Netflix documentary is going to be about it, isn't it?
Talk about perfect timing for content.
Oh, unbelievable.
I think I'll probably do some Instagramming off of that after every episode, just because it's going to be so juicy and all the details and, you know, depending on how much the guys really put out there, you never really know. You know, golfers are usually pretty quiet and reserved and don't really want to make too much noise, but you know, maybe the title Full Send has a whole new meaning and we're going to get a lot of details and a lot of juicy stuff. And guys are going to be a little bit more unhinged than they usually would be.
If it was around when, like, say, 2012, when you're having one of your best stretches, would you have signed up to it?
I would have entertained it. Like, I told other people at different parts of my career, it would have meant different things to me. It would have been hard to say no to so much unfamiliar territory moving forward with it and taking away from the Ryder Cups and the President's Cups. And those are such passionate events that... when you're a part of, man, you can't imagine not being a part of it. And you can't imagine, you know, not playing in certain events in certain cities. It would be a very difficult decision. I don't know what the heck I would do, but every player has kind of made their decisions for different reasons. And so that's such an interesting part of it.
Yeah, no, definitely for sure. Yeah. So obviously, Hunter, as we said there, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. We're running a series called The Professional Route. So obviously, all of our listeners will be familiar with what we do on that. But for any new listeners, it's obviously to get your backstory and to understand your journey to the professional ranks through amateur. So if we go back to where it all started for yourself, Hunter, what got you into the game of golf?
I grew up in Southern California and I'm an only child. And so my dad played quite a bit and tried different sports as a kid, like most kids do. And golf is something that kind of stuck with me a little bit. I didn't mind kind of going out and practicing by myself and just kind of hitting balls. I remember like my first tournament, I think my dad signed me up for when I was probably like 10 or 11. And I felt like I played really well. And I had really no sense or bearing or barometer of how good I was, but I felt like I had a good time. I enjoyed it. I felt like I played good. And I think I got beat by like 9 shots in a 9-hole tournament. So my education really took quickly to tournament golf. And some of these kids have been playing since they were like 3 and 4. And I just started, I think probably when I was 9. So I've probably been playing for a year or two. And so many good players at such a young age in California. It was definitely a challenge for a few years. And then we moved out to Texas. And I'm not sure if it was just the landscape or changing or something, but I felt like my game improved over the next few years dramatically. And just kind of kept growing from there. But it was something that I think it's such incremental steps and hitting a little bit further, a little bit higher, and making, you know, just breaking barriers, right? You break 90 and break 80 and 70. And then there's just all these goals that kind of keep pushing you forward to that I think is so unique to golf.
Yeah, we're still working on the 81, aren't we?
We got plenty of time, guys. We just need to never stop.
That's it, yeah. So obviously then, when did golf start getting serious? I take it you're just having a bit of fun there, then your dad's getting you into the tournament. But when did you realize, you know, this is something that I want to do for the rest of my life?
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. I think in college, going to college was getting out of my own and having my future in my own hands was a big step. And so, I mean, I had a good season. I went to Southern Cal for 1 year, had a good fall, but I wasn't in a place, a good environment for me. So I had apprehension about continuing staying at Southern Cal, and I ended up leaving and going to Oklahoma State. And there was a few months there where it was ugly. My game, I wasn't in a good routine based in a kind of conformed environment at Southern Cal like I was at home with my dad. You know, being an only child, my dad was with me a lot and he helped me a ton and kind of kept me straight and narrow and kept me from a, hey, this is going to be really hard. If you want to be really good at golf, you're going to have to put the time and the effort. It's not going to be a hobby. It's going to have to be something you really focus on all the time. And so when I went to Southern Cal, it didn't feel very comfortable to me. I was just, I wasn't, I don't say allowed to, but there was just so many obstacles to just kind of getting into my normal routine that I knew I had to make a change. And going to Oklahoma State with kind of a legendary coach in Mike Holder started to create some boundaries for me and some routine. And the bar was very, very high there. And you weren't going to stop. You were going to continue to work to reach that bar. And there was nothing short of that that was acceptable. And so it was a few months where it was challenging. It was hard. I was not playing well and I was very frustrated. I just didn't know quite who I was at the time. And all of a sudden things slowly started to change. I started to feel like I sort of knew my parameters for how I was going to play my very best golf. And it was just a great environment for me to be the very best I could be. And so that kind of launched me to my kind of professional career. 2 years after that, I kind of turned pro and started that journey.
It's crazy. That's twice you've been in California, and once you've left, your golf's went uphill.
Yeah, I know. I never thought of it that way, but that's very interesting. But it was totally the reality. I don't know why, but it just, there's something a slower pace in the Midwest, in Texas and Oklahoma. And it just, like I said, environment is so important, you know, and timing of things. If you're in a good place around good people who are going to support you and push you when you need to be pushed, but just when you're just like, as I said, the right environment can do amazing things. And I just was in the right place and I was happy that they accepted me at Oklahoma State. And I was able to start my career sort of again there. And like I said, it just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, no. So, well, obviously, going back to your college career, then what was the biggest thing that you took from college into the professional game? Was the specific thing from the coach or the way you were taught how to prep for tournaments, anything like that?
He always preached sort of mental toughness. That was something that it's sort of something you can bring into the course every day. You know, you might not putt well or hit it well or whatever. You know, there's going to be all kinds of obstacles. But you had to be mentally tough to handle all the ups and downs of what's going to come around in one day. But in 4 days of sort of professional golf or any tournament, you're going to have to grind through it. You're going to have rough patches where things just don't go well. And so you've got to kind of push through those things and be mentally tough and be consistent in that. So when you show up to the golf course every day, you have that in your tool belt that can never leave you.
And you credit the coaches, obviously, because you see so many people coming out of college now just ready to win, like yourself, yeah, straight out of college onto the PGA Tour. Like, is that a credit to the coaches or the school system, the whole setup?
Probably a lot of things. I think there's just the instruction now has improved greatly, probably since like the 90s. I remember when I went to school at Oklahoma State, they had their own golf course, their own facilities. Now, basically every university has to have premier facilities if you want to get really good players.
Yeah.
And I think just like the amount of information learning about the swing you hear from a mechanical point of view, a biomechanical point of view, and what guys are doing now at such a really young age. I think they're understanding themselves so much better than we did when we were just playing. I mean, it was, you know, Tiger was sort of the premier player at the time, and everyone was just sort of copying that mold. And now guys have so much access to learn about who they are, and they have got, I think the teachers are really, really good now. But they're really getting a good sense of themselves at such a really young age. And I think you're seeing it in all sports, that technology is vastly improving these kids at such a younger age. And I do think coaches are a lot better. There's a lot more of them that are very, very good at what they can do. But I think I went to a college tournament not too long ago, and it just seems like the guys just are bigger and stronger. They're fitter. It's more of an emphasis. Like when I went to school, it was something you did, but it wasn't, you know, at Southern Cal, you did it just because it felt like other people were doing it. But at Oklahoma State, it was a thing. It was like, you need to be strong if you want to play golf. If you want to wake up and go to class and practice and play, you're going to have to physically be able to do it, because that's going to go before, you know, hopefully mentally. And if you want to do this for a long time, you have to do things now. So it's just been a process, I think, over time. But when you see these young guys, man, they're a different breed, and they're really, really good, and they're really, really good quickly.
Yeah, no, and obviously the point that you made there, they've got access to, you know, everything on YouTube, yeah, now, and they can see past tournaments and what wins these tournaments. They got so much data at hand now, haven't they?
Yeah,
which is obviously to their advantage moving into those pro ranks. So obviously moving into the pro ranks, then that transition, you mentioned a certain name there, Tiger Woods, obviously. What was the transition like for you? How did you feel going into the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I went to Q school when there was Q school, and got my card, and just sort of stepped on the tour. And my dad kind of traveled with me a little bit, just because I didn't really know anyone out there. It definitely felt at the time, for those first few years, the tour was old, was much older than it is now. It feels like when guys now are hitting around 40 or so, there's kind of I don't say a steep decline, but there's a decline. And back then with like Kenny Perry and Vijay Singh, they were almost hitting their prime in their 40s. And golf was just sort of different at that time. And now like the youth was like, there was more of a, you're going to have to kind of pay your dues. It's a little bit, it's just a little different mentality. And it's a bit, man, it was a big step just from living at home to all of a sudden you're on tour, traveling all the time. You've got a caddy, somebody you don't know. You don't really know if that's going to work or not, but, you know, comes highly recommended, and he's, you know, been on the tour. Caddies at that time were tour caddies who you saw, and it seems like a lot of guys now have friends that the caddy for them, or there's partnerships built before almost these guys actually turn pro. It's definitely just a different type of transition now. It seems like guys are just so much more well prepared to be professionals than they used to be, and so it was definitely different, and it took me a little bit time to kind of, for me to believe myself that, hey, I am good enough as is to go out and compete at a high level. I definitely had to learn that through a little bit of time, and had to go back to Q school a couple years later. And then from there, I felt like I'm capable of playing at a high level and winning on a tour, and I can do this. And so it took me a little bit of time for me to truly believe that I belong, and I don't need to question myself. I have all the skill sets to do it. I just have to do it. But you got to believe before you can do something like that. And it just took me a few years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously we have had a lot of professional golfers on the podcast who've said the exact same thing, really, that it's taken them 3 to 4 years to find the feet on the tour and to start feeling like they belong there. I just wanted to talk, obviously, the PGA Tour have introduced this guaranteed money for rookies this year of the half a million. Yeah, what if that was available to you, would that have made a huge difference in your first couple of years? I know financially it would have, but from a pressure perspective, was you thinking about the money, or was you just out there trying to win?
I think I was so young that I just, and I was lucky enough that I got a great deal from Ping when I turned pro. You know, Charles Howe was right before me, and he took the Callaway deal. So they needed a younger player, and I came in right at the right time. So I got a good bit of money from Ping at the time. So that wasn't as important, but I think it's great that they did that. I think that was necessary for young guys. Somebody, I think I was listening to another podcast say, you know, that helps. If you want to work with some of the teachers out there nowadays, they're expensive and they require some upfront money to be like, hey, I'd like to work with you, but it's a business now. And you don't usually grow up with these teachers, or they were at the time, they felt like few and far between. Now there's a lot of really good teachers out there, but it's a business. Teaching is more of a business now than it was then. And for caddy fees, and I heard guys say that's a huge relief for them that they can invest that money into good teachers and strength conditioning people. They don't have to, because if you're going on tour and you didn't have much money, you're already out money going into that season. I mean, from flights and hotels and caddy fees, you're out quite a bit of money. Now these guys kind of have that they can sort of invest for that season or two and figure out, how am I going to do this and how am I going to work that money into me playing the best golf? So I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great for these guys to not have to really worry about that. There's no other sport where you have to worry about paying into your events to go play. Yeah. So it's great for them. I think it was absolutely right move, and I'm happy for them. And I said, I was lucky that it wasn't as a concern, but man, it's like, you want to stay on tour. As soon as you get out there, you don't want to leave. You definitely don't. When I made it through Q school, I didn't really want to go back. I didn't want to go to the Q school after being on tour. You know, I wanted to stay out there and compete on that kind of level.
You got a seat at the big table. You don't want to leave, do you? Like,
absolutely not. That food is good.
It's when you talk about players now who obviously they build teams, like you said, caddies and relationships before they get out there. And it's like doing like podcast episodes like this. And if someone's listening to yourself, they know now that that's what they need to do in order to have a better chance out there. Because just some of the insights that you're saying now are just phenomenal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like guys are just so, when I look at these guys, they're just so well prepared. They're so mature. I remember when I met Jordan Spieth for the first time, I was just blown away. I'm like, he didn't talk like a kid. He didn't prepare like a kid. He was ready for the challenge, and he was not worried about failure at all. And I think a lot of these guys, I don't see much failure in their eyes as much as I see opportunity and the challenge of it. And I think when I played, there was this, you know, sort of umbrella of Tiger where everybody was sort of copying him and trying to be him because he was the standard and he was so amazing. And it was so unlike anything we've ever seen before. So, you know, so many guys were trying to make their swings like that. And, you know, do I fist pump? Do I not? How do I act on the golf course? I want to be like this guy. And these guys are, and all these guys now, they're all individuals because they believe in themselves and they trust kind of what they do. And they don't have that kind of shadow hanging over them. There's no one out there. There's no big dog out there. It feels like they know that they're good enough to beat and get to that number one spot. And that's what's kind of cool. There's so many opportunities for these guys to be number one players, and it's going to flow and change all the time now over the next, you know, 5-10 years.
And so did you fall into the Tiger trap then? Were you chasing Tiger's swing and Tiger's antics on the course, or was you just keeping yourself to yourself out there?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there was, you know, you saw it, and it's, I played with him as an amateur at the time when he was playing in 2000s and the early, you know, every amateur from like winning a the USAM or the Pub Links, they knew when he was playing, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, he's out there. First light, 7 a.m. with Stevie. So you'd all run out there and get on that tee and join them. And usually through an agent or whoever, you can kind of set that up or let it be known that I like to go play. And he was always super easy to be around. Luckily at that time, there's not many people, but he was always welcome to young guys kind of playing with them. And we got out there at Olympia Fields, and I was on that range, you know, ready. And all of a sudden we heard whispers, Tiger's going to tee. So we just sprinted over there, make sure we get there, because he's not going to wait on us. And he's not going to wait on anybody. You're under his schedule if you want to be a part of that. And I think Thomas Spjorn was playing with him that day. They were, you know, very close, probably still are. And it was funny. He didn't hit any balls or anything, and kind of duck hooked the first shot with his driver. Got a ball from Stevie, and then just piked this high draw, and that's all you saw the rest of the day. It was just these high draws, and it was just like, you know, just the way he hit it and the way that it sounded was just so different. It was hard not to be, you know, caught in that tidal wave of just of ability and focus and everything that he had to go through. Playing with him more and more down the line, you know, getting to know him better. It was the stuff he had to deal with on a day in a day basis and continually stay focused on the task at hand of winning tournaments is so impressive.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, obviously we've all, like you, been inspired by him. We grew up playing in college in the UK, and then I went over to America myself, and all I wanted to do was be like Tiger. So yeah, it must have been an amazing experience playing and competing against them. Just talk a bit about Tiger, and I know you've obviously mentioned it there, but obviously going into your professional career, you come up against them a lot. What was it like going into tournament mode with him?
I always enjoyed playing with him. It was actually oddly, like, you'd rather be with him than sort of on the, you know, before or after him. It was just kind of chaos, everything around. But when you're in it, it's a nice bubble because he plays oddly at such a great pace. You know, that may sound weird, but there was a rhythm to how he played, and you can play with that rhythm. And so it was kind of easy for me to fall into that and just go out and play with him. And, you know, there's such a blend of artistry with how he played and technique. He knew how to always balance the two, and he had just such a, you know, he just saw things differently. It felt like when you were playing, like when he was playing, he was truly playing the golf course. You know, I was watching the US Open last year, and I was like, it feels like John Rahm, as an example, he's not playing the course and the situation as much as he's just playing golf that day. And he has such high expectations, and he's one of my favorite guys that I watch, but it's sometimes he doesn't realize he's playing a US Open. It's like, hitting in the middle of the green is a good shot. You don't have to judge yourself every time. You just got to keep moving forward. Felt like Tiger wasn't maybe trying to have the best round that day. He was trying to figure out, he was trying to make the least amount of mistakes and play smart and just put a number out there that he knew was going to be put himself in sort of position. If you know what I mean, he understood the situation so, so well. He just never put himself in danger. And it was just, you know, he had great chemistry with obviously Stevie and the way they talked, and just, it was just very professional how things went about. And, like I said, it just was, it's just a masterclass in how to play golf from such a tournament perspective and, getting the most out of every single day.
That's a inside the rope sort of insight, but like from 10 deep in the crowd, just watching them, even the way he puts the tee in the ground is better than like everyone else. It just seems unreal. But that's the pedestal we put him on.
I know. But just the way he grips the club, right? It's just
that's
like,
what I mean. Yeah.
So natural. It's just like he was born to do this, and just that, you know, it's just everything he does is just, there's this feel to him. Like certain players, you can tell they're just great at certain things, right? Like Phil gets a wedge in his hand, you know, Luke Donald gets a putter in his hand, and just, they make it look so easy. They were just sort of born to do those motions, and just, you can tell they can see it and feel it. And that's just the way Tiger is. Like, he puts his hand on that club, and there's like this, you know, sixth sense of understanding where the club face is at all times. And he's always in control of it. It's just, it's neat to kind of see someone at that such a high level do it so well, even as you're doing it, trying to do it as well as he is.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. He said, hopefully we'll get him back on the course soon enough and we'll see him competing again, won't we?
You hope so. Yeah. I mean, that's, he loves it, right? He loves to play tournaments. Yeah. He loves to compete. And so he's always going to figure out a way he always believes that he's going to figure out a way to compete at the highest level. And, you know, it's just, you know, now it just feels like he only has so many shots, literal like shots he can hit left, not the ability to hit different shots, just like his body can only take so much now. So
yeah,
he's obviously getting himself in position to where he can do that at the biggest moments. And there's nothing like watching him play. There truly, truly isn't.
Well, forget Tiger Woods, because this is Hunter Mahan podcast. Getting up to 2007 there, once you've really broke through and won the Travelers, what clicked differently that year?
That was, I don't know if anything truly clicked. It was just, I think it was a natural progression. That's kind of how my junior, college, and amateur, all that stuff, it just kind of, I didn't have any spikes. It just was like I was getting better and better and understanding myself more and more. I remember playing Travelers before the final round. I felt like I knew this was my time. I was not scared of it. I just knew that I can do it today, you know, that I have belief in myself. I'm confident. The situation does not overwhelm me at all. I really love the golf course. And I'm ready to go out and win. And, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to win, but to know that, I just remember being on the range, getting ready, like, I'm capable, and this is my time. And it's a wild finish. It's one of the coolest courses on tour, you know, the Travelers Championship, and kind of a crazy finish. You know, birding, you know, I think bogeyed 17 and then birdieing 18 and then winning in the playoff. It was no cooler way to do that and to kind of hit big moments at the best times. It almost feels, looking back on it, I've seen, you know, kind of highlights of it and stuff, feels out of body. Like, did I do that? That's crazy. But huge moment, you know, because that's what you wanted to do, right? Is win on the PGA Tour, and to do it in that fashion was so cool.
When you're saying before the final round that you knew it was your time, as soon as like it was playoff time, did anything doubt kick in when you thought maybe it's not?
Well, definitely. I mean, when you go through those days, it's just like, You know, those holes, you know, playing like 15, there's water on the left, and 16 is kind of a tricky green, and 17, there's just disaster everywhere. So you never really know until you do it. And, but I felt like I hit a lot of good shots when I had to. I was ready. Like I said, I just wasn't afraid of the moment to hit something I had to hit. And that's kind of what made me kind of confident. And, it's always okay to fail. You know, you just want to make sure that you stood up there truly ready and not afraid of it, you know, because you're going to fall. You just have to get back up. But I just was so confident in myself that, like, I can do it. Everything makes sense for me today. And it's going to be a challenge. I think you have to know it's going to be a challenge. You're going to know that things are not going to go well. I remember, a good example would be playing the Tour Championship. I was in the final group, I think, with Bill Haas, and I stepped up to that day, and I had a very simple goal. Was like, I'm just going to control myself and control my emotions all day. Whether it's good or bad, I'm just going to breathe and move on to the next shot. I'm just going to be in control of whatever happens. And I played great, you know, lost in a playoff to Bill, but I felt like I did everything that I could. And I never felt like the moment was too big, because I set myself up prior to that day, just knowing that I'm going to be in control today. I'm going to take deep breaths when I need to, but I'm going to know that I'm going to give my all today. And I think when you've kind of set that standard for yourself beginning of the day, and something, a simple goal like that, an expectation for yourself always helps. you know, because if you're just trying to play well or hit good shots, it's hard to do those things. But if you have simple goals, it's much easier to accomplish that day, and then great things can happen after that.
Yeah, no, definitely. The obviously 2010, you got your victory there at the Waste Management. What was that? What's that atmosphere like there in the theater of playing at TPC Scottsdale on the stadium course?
Well, it's completely bonkers. I don't know how else to explain it, because it's unlike anything in golf or anything almost in sport, right? Like, yeah. I guess it's if you're, you know, if you're a Manchester United fan going to an Arsenal game.
Whoa, wait. We're Everton fans.
You probably don't know who that is.
If you're an Everton fan and you're going, you know, to Arsenal, right, whatever. If people are just yelling at you, you know, to do something good or do something terrible, you know, it's not even like, it's a little more comical than it is competitive, right? You go to the Ryder Cup, it's kind of fun to have both sides. And people cheering when you do something great, and then like complete silence when you do something great. I think that's so cool and so fascinating, so great about sports. This is just like comedy. These are people who are just, they are not here for you. They are here to see great shots and absolutely horrific shots. There's no in between. If you hit a good shot 20 feet, you were a waste of their time. And so it's just kind of chaos that way. And they built, you know, kudos to Waste Management and the Thunderbirds. They've created something so unique in sports, which is so fun, right? It's kind of one shot. It's kind of, you know, for a couple of days of the year, it's kind of fun and chaos. But it's pretty cool. I feel terrible. You know, I just can't imagine an amateur or, you know, those athletes or actors, whoever roll through their Wednesday trying to do that. Cause it's like the first time in their life they're going to be booed and yelled at, and they're like, what is this? This is strange. People usually love me. Now they're screaming at me, and it's strange, but it's a cool place to win. That is for sure. You know, I remember birding there on Sunday. I don't know if I remember birding, I think, to take the lead at the time. And so that was cool. That was a truly a great vibe to be there and to win at that event. But it has grown every single year. I mean, they try to pack as many people as they can.
Yeah, it's crazy the scenes that you see now, especially last year with obviously Harry Higgs and Damon taking the tops off, and we obviously had a couple of hole-in-ones as well. It doesn't make it a bit more special, doesn't it, that theatre?
There's a clean-up crew for all the beer cans, isn't there, and the hole-in-ones. Oh, like, what is going on here?
they do it right? They put the tees up on Saturday. They want the chaos and the craziness, and players are buying into it now more than ever. I mean, obviously, when I kind of joined the tour and there was this, it was more of a nuisance. Like, guys did not like it. They did not think it was tournament golf. They didn't even think it was golf, right? They thought it was just ridiculous at times. But it was great for the event. And now players are buying into it more and more, which makes it better and better, right? It's just fun. We can keep golf great and have some fun at the same time. And make a great sponsor and a great event really even better. I mean, people talk about it all. I feel like people talk about it all year here. You know, they're getting kind of ready for it. And they know it's kind of Super Bowl has its great date, Super Bowl kind of week, kind of which adds to it. And it's in Phoenix this year, which is even better. I've been a part of a couple of those. It's kind of wild and crazy and fun. But it definitely adds to the event. And that's, you know, makes the event special.
It's like the whole of golf's took a little more of a relaxed, like, even with miking the players up now and a few people getting involved with that. It's like the whole, like, laser focus at all times is took us not a step back, but it's a little bit more lax, isn't it, with a few of the things that you see going on?
Well, it's sort of at the Tiger, right? The Tiger's out of it now, so there's a new sort of age of golfer, right? Tiger was – there was a, you know – stealthiness to his and his demeanor was one thing in one way, and prior to that it was sort of similar. It was the old guard, the old way of playing golf, and golf was this. Golf was elevated. It was very white collar, and it's very pristine and elegant in a lot of different ways. And it's we're just adding, I think, in so many different ways, even from fashion. And from Top Golf, we're making golf a little more accessible, adding, like I said, mics to players and just making it a little bit more fun and having a little bit, you know, doing the full send thing on Netflix, right? There's just all these little avenues where we're making golf a little bit
modernizing.
yeah, modernizing and accessible to the fans in a good way. And still on, I think, on the players' terms, and Max Hillman did a great job, and
yeah,
the Farmers Insurance, right? Just a little bit of conversation is totally acceptable. And as long as players are known, right? I think we can't have it all day.
No, of course,
being mic'd and stuff, right? You know, but you give players parameters and you give the right guys the right opportunity, it's going to be a hit.
Especially with Max going and winning first go, so it's like you can't really say it's destroyed his focus because he went and won it. So it's like, and then Mitchell getting it this week going, well, I just want to hope through what Max did. And it's like, it's perfect, isn't it? Couldn't win any better.
Perfectly. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was definitely, it was a perfect timing, right, for them to do that and for Max kind of pull through and play the well as well as he did. Because it's for a short time, you can always do it. I remember like when Peter Jacobson was sort of someone who mentored me a little bit when I first turned pro, and he always talked about he came from that Arnie tree of engaging with the fans, right? Being taking a moment, signing a few, talking, and he always was like, you know, what's it going to cost you? You know, 5, 3, 4, 5 extra pitches or putts or something to say hi, talk to, interact with somebody like that. You know, something that can really make their day, right? Make their tournament. And so it doesn't take a lot to engage with fans and do things like what Max did that can make a big impact.
Yeah, just what you're talking about, the old guard there, obviously, when you're talking about your natural progression through 2007, obviously that win got you to the top 100, then into the top 50, and you got a captain's pick for the President's Cup off Jack Nicklaus that year. She talks about the emotions through it being part of a President's Cup.
Yeah, I was driving back from Tulsa, and he, Jack Nicklaus called me, and he's not, you know, he's not very ceremonial or anything. He just kind of was like, just want to say congratulations, you're going to be on the team. And obviously making a team was a huge goal of mine during that tour, because I just always loved college golf for the team aspect and being a part of something. Thought was so fun, and so making it was incredible, eye-opening to be there with, you know, Phil and Tiger and Stricker and Charles Howell, so many players, and Jack being your captain was just, it's hard to put into words that moment and being a part of a team. I felt definitely like out of fish out of water, and it was definitely overwhelming. I had to play with Phil that week, which is super fun, but it was also overwhelming. He's someone, as we know, who likes to talk on and off the golf course.
Yeah.
And he was definitely, but he's also a leader, and he wants to lead. He wants to bring people under his wing, and he's done that kind of his whole career and help players along. And he enjoys the new guys, and he enjoys that energy that I think new players bring. And I think they helped motivate him to be better. And so it was fun to play with him. And that was a tremendous experience for me to go next year into making the Ryder Cup team. Because if I had to go straight into the Ryder Cup team, it would have been really, really challenging and really hard to kind of not know what to expect and then have that kind of thrown at you. So that was really nice to go to Montreal and have that experience, be around the guys in that different setting, and then be able to go into a Ryder Cup and feel totally comfortable and totally understand what I have to do to play my very best.
Yeah. Well, talk to us about the Ryder Cup then. So obviously what's your greatest Ryder Cup battle? And obviously talk us through the dick, because obviously your three Ryder Cups that you had there in 08, 10 and 14, what was your, if you can pick a favorite, obviously what was the best one for you?
Well, obviously the winning one was always the best, but they're also special and they're also unique. I think Paul Hisinger did such a great job, and that was so memorable because, you know, that's such a packed week for a lot of extracurriculars that you need to do and be a part of. And so he made it so easy on us. Like, you know, he gave a lot of accountability and authority to the team, to the players themselves, to be a part of the process. And when he did that, the process for him for picking players was easier. And as soon as you got there, you knew who, you know, they had a pod system, but he had that little group, and you knew exactly who you're going to play with all week. You might play with, I played with Justin Leonard and Phil, and it was Justin Leonard and Phil or Anthony Kim. And so we knew that. And so there was no guessing in there. So we got to know each other all week, how we were going to play certain holes, kind of their, you know, golf balls, whatever, right? All the little things that, you know, you don't really know, all the situation, you can kind of attack all the little situations that may come up during the week. So there was a lot to that, and it made the experience really easy because it was just about playing golf. And it was so fun being at home and doing it, but all the other ones being on the road, being in the different places was also very special because the fans over in Europe are fantastic. They were classy and enthusiastic, and they would get after it and they'd get after you, but in a great way. So and being around Tom Watson was incredible, and Corey Pavin. And like I said, the experience with the players is what you really remember, and everyone really kind of bonding that week and understanding that we're a part of something so special and unique. It is just such a, you know, it's such a core memory, right? It's such a, winning a tournament is littered with stress. You know, you want to win, and it's just a big sense of achievement, but man, you're stressed a lot, and it's exhausting, and you put so much effort into it. This is such a reward for all the things that you've done that you can kind of enjoy it more throughout the week and be a part of the whole process, that it's not so stressful. It's like you're allowed to see and you're allowed to feel the fans and be a part of it, you know, kind of like we saw, like, I think it was Max and, well, knows like Justin Thomas was on the green and Daniel Berger at the last Ryder Cup were on the first tee, and I think they're, you know, chugging beers and they're like, you don't do that in majors, you don't do that in tournaments, but you can do it there because you're not playing, and so you can be a part of the event in a different way, and that's what makes it so unique.
Yeah, the course setup helps as well, because obviously that first hole at Whistling Straits, driving the green and things, gets everyone pumped up for the
absolutely. Yeah. It's really cool when you have a fun setup like that and a good start like that.
Yeah, and so obviously onto the battle then. So, what was your greatest ever Ryder Cup battle? Which one did you enjoy the most, and which one do you wish you could have back?
Oh, well, obviously I wish I could beat Graham, but that's I like Graham. I like Graham a lot. You know, he's he was so classy during that, and he was so he's just such a good dude. You know, I think we felt great pride, Justin Leonard and I, taking on, I think it was Sergio and Miguel, and beating those guys. They had such a run in 08. I mean, it feels like they didn't lose forever. I mean, they were such a powerful pairing that, you know, to beat the Spaniards in a Ryder Cup is always a big deal. There's such a force. I remember playing against Justin Rose, and we both had Sean Foley as our coach at the time. And he's like, listen, I'm excited for you guys. And he told us before, and I just hope you guys don't play each other. And sure enough, we had to play each other. And he was hoping for a tie. And that's exactly what he got. So I would have liked to have beaten Justin. He's such a good player and good guy. But a tie is better than a loss. But, you know, when you play a Ryder Cup, man, you're playing against the very, very, very best. And so it is very challenging to beat someone like that, you know, on a Sunday of a Ryder Cup when you're so exhausted and you're so tired, emotionally tired. It's quite an event, but it's always fun playing as the best.
1,000,000%. Moving on to, if you go to 2012, like just going on with obviously wins, you've won twice in 2012 there, beating a certain Rory McIlroy in the match play. That must have been some day.
That was crazy week. I beat like Zach Johnson. I beat some incredible players that week. I was, you know, I had a great luck on that golf course. I won there. I think I finished, lost to Matt Kuchar like the next year in the finals.
Yeah.
I had great success there and, you know, for whatever reason, but I always enjoyed the match play, that match play event. It was a lot of fun. It's just nice to go one-on-one with somebody, you know, like you're right. As soon as you step on the tee, it's not the first day of a 4-day event where you're slowly getting into things and seeing how things play out. You're just right away. You get to, you know, what you have to do that day. And so, playing so well there, and having an opportunity against Rory, I think he was 2 in the world. He was on his way to being number one. He was on such an incredible stretch. He beat me actually a few years before then when he was an up-and-comer. And I remember my caddy John Wood and I were playing him, and this was after his great success at Carnoustie, I think, when he was like an amateur. And it's kind of neat to see someone so young talked about in such a big way, like, hey, this is the future of the UK, Rory McIlroy from Ireland here, and really talented guy, but also just so passionate. And he was, I mean, he was ready for the moments, and he was ready for, he wanted it all. He wanted all the smoke, as the kids would say. Like, he wanted every challenge you can throw at him. And so I knew it was going to be a tough match, and, you know, felt lucky to beat him. You know, he had a tough match against Lee, I think, the day before, so, or the morning before. And so it was, you know, to do it against the best at that time on a big stage and a big event like that, that's pretty cool. That's one of the, you know, obviously a super, one of the best highlights of my career is to, you know, go against the best one-on-one like that, and to beat him was clearly awesome.
So obviously you had the cup record, like you were top point scorer, then you've obviously had the President's Cup, and then you've won the match play, you've come runner up in the match play. Is it the college setup that's got you like such a good match play player, or is it literally just the freshness of it?
I think, well, it's attitude usually. You know, some guys don't like it, some guys don't have great records in it for some weird reason. Who knows why? You know, I think like Jordan Spieth just got his like first full point in the singles, and he's been on like 7 or 8 teams, right? It's like, that doesn't make any sense that guy, as good as he is in every sense of competition and every standard, just got his first win. Just, you know, some things just don't make sense. You never really know why. You just usually try to ride the wave when it's good as long as you can. But like I said, I just enjoyed it because it was just so simple, and it was the guy's right here, and as you can see his shots and how he's playing. There's just something macho about having to beat some other guy right next to you, right? Like, there's, you can kind of, you don't have to be pretty, you just have to beat him. And there's, I think there's something so cool about that.
Yeah, no, definitely. So just obviously what are you doing at the moment then, Hunter? What's the plans in the golfing world for yourself now?
Good question. I don't really know. Might keep doing some talking and just maybe keep talking about golf. I'm not really sure what I want to do or what I want to, you know, spend my time doing and invest in. I think whatever I do kind of next, I want to make sure I do it well. But I put a lot of time and energy into golf, so it's been nice to kind of decompress and kind of get away from it and kind of be home for a while. That was something I wanted to do, was stop traveling and just kind of be home and be in one place and not have to worry about going to the next place and just sort of taking care of myself and not let golf dictate my life. And so it's been great. I've really enjoyed it. And like I said, seeing golf from a different lens, I've really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed watching these guys and playing these big events. I did a little commentary on the Ryder Cup 2 years ago, and that was great. I thought that was so much fun, and talking about it and kind of giving fans from a different perspective, a different look on what these guys are facing and kind of what they're thinking about. So maybe I'll keep doing that or do something in some sort of aspect of that. But options are open, and I'm in kind of no rush to make a decision.
But you were saying about, obviously, in 2007, nothing really like clicked to make, you know, get that first win and get over that hurdle. But then coming through, obviously, you got your last win in 2014, and then obviously having a bit of a struggle through the next couple of years. Just did anything click the other way that you noticed in your own game or your own life that made that happen, or is it just a progression?
I think I had 3 kids. I've got 4 now, kind of, and I never wanted my kids to lead my life, if that makes sense. I wanted them to have their own life at home and school and friends and family, and so being away from them and kind of doing something totally different, being a professional golfer or athlete requires a lot of time and a lot of time away from your family and a lot of focus. If you're not willing to give that focus and intention into everything that you do, it's going to be very hard to compete with the guys that are coming out hungry from overseas or from college golf right here or wherever they're coming from, man. They're hungry to succeed, and yeah, they're going to work harder than you, and they're younger and they're more athletic. And so if you're not willing to put in that time and intentionality of every shot you hit with a purpose, it's going to be hard to compete at that level. I think it was a lot of different kind of scenarios, kind of playing to one. My technique definitely got away from me. I'm not exactly sure how or why. I definitely could see it, but I had a hard time fixing what the feeling that I had that wasn't a feeling. It was just what I did. And then to figure out how to feel that again was extremely difficult. It was extremely hard. I haven't hit that many balls yet or anything in the past year and a half. So it's been nice to take a break and just kind of think about myself and what I want to do and what I'm sort of interested in a different landscape. And I truly enjoyed playing golf and felt lucky that I did and lucky of the success that I had. But it was, I never thought of it as some defining thing in my life or who I was. It was just something that I did. And it's something I really enjoyed doing, but it, you know, kind of hit its shelf life and maybe someday I'll get it, a desire back and maybe go play a senior tour, who knows. But today I'm very happy with where I am and what I'm doing now.
So do you not play at all? You don't even go and have a knock on the munis or the local course?
No, I literally don't. I think I know where my clubs are, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm not exactly sure where they are, but I think I know where they are.
Right. Well, that says it all, doesn't it?
If that says anything. I know I've got a bunch of golf shoes, but I think I know where they are. I play randomly, I guess. My patience for going out and playing for like 5 hours is zero. Like, the idea of that is just torture to me. Not playing, but playing and taking a long time and not being able to go at my own pace. So it's brutal. I have such a brutal time with that. But just hit it. But there's nothing like hitting a pure shot, right? There's nothing like hitting a pure forehand that goes nice and high in the air with a high draw. That's the best feeling in the world.
Is that nice, is it?
Someday you'll get there. I believe in you. I believe in you.
Thanks.
Well, it's been great to speak to you, Hunter. What, obviously, not on the golf front, but just on any front, what does the future look like? You just say commentating, or are you going to try and get into that, or... What did you say you were going to look on doing?
I don't know. I mean, I think the landscape of golf media has changed a lot, right? So many guys are, you know, like no laying up guys and you. There's so many different amateurs and people who love golf and are getting in it from a different perspective. And it seems like there's more tours popping up now, so you never know who's going to need what and when and where. So there's plenty of voices in the growing golf media market. But I don't know, you know, maybe do radio or something like that. I don't know. I've got options and I'm keeping my options open and just being free and to whatever comes up, but just whatever I think comes up, I want to make sure I'm good at it. And I do want to put the time into it that whoever listens or whatever I have to say is it's coming from me and it's truthful and it's, you know, comes with some substance.
You will not wanting to offend you with our name, but you're more than welcome to come a bogey boy whenever you want.
Here you go. Well, I might hold you to that.
Definitely. Well, look, no, we really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to have a chat with us. I'm sure a lot of people will get a lot of insights from your journey and obviously what an incredible journey it was, a very successful one as well. So we wish you all the best of luck with whatever the future does hold. And obviously we'll keep in touch and we'll see you soon, hopefully.
Guys, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we connected. So good luck to your boys in the Ryder Cup this year. Maybe we'll talk before then, give a little preview.
Yeah, definitely. Hey,
that'll be great, that, yeah.
That will be really good, yeah.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah. Fly me out to Rome and we'll just do it live. How about that?
Let's go.
That sounds perfect.
All right, then, Hunter, will you take care? Enjoy the rest of your day.
Guys, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.